Okay, thanks very much, John. I'm Rick Summerhill, CTO for Internet2. First, a disclaimer, I'm not an expert on this information. There are much better people who could give this talk at from Internet2. I've taken slides from Nate Klingenstein and John Krinke of Internet2. I'll give you an overview. If you dive down into the weeds too much, I'll get in trouble. So I will avoid that, believe me. So what is this issue all about? We all have sign-ins to a variety of different websites all across the world. And so you end up keeping a list of all of these various passwords that you have to use. And the question is there a better way to do that? And that's to use a federated identity system where you log into you have a home somewhere, probably at a university, and you log into that home, and then you use the appropriate information that is given by that home entity. So you have just a single login, essentially. So that's the basic idea. A user tries to access a protected application. The user tells the application where he's from, what the home institution is, what the identity provider is. The home tells the application about the user, and then the user is rejected or accepted. And here is a more detailed slide that indicates that. So the user tells the application, I'd like to access the application. The application says, what's your home? The application says, please log into your home. And then the user logs into the home saying, I'd like to use this service provider. And then the data is sent back. The user sends the data back to the service provider, and then either access is granted or not. So that's the basic idea, the basic structure of this. Two crucial elements here. One is the identity provider, the IDP, and the other is the service provider, the SP. And so those are sort of the two fundamental concepts in this federated approach. Shibboleth, which is now at version 2.0, and just that version just came out, provides software for both an IDP and an SP. And I'm not going to go through some of this stuff. Basically, the IDP is written in Java and runs on any servlet and supports multiple protocols. So back at the home base, you may have LDAP or Kerberos or some other particular protocol, and the IDP, the guts of the IDP, of course, takes care of all of that. Here's sort of a picture of what the basic software looks like. I'm not going to go into the details of that, but it gives you the basic idea, and you can browse the middleware pages on the Internet2 site to get more detail. The service provider aspect of this was written in C++ for Apache and a variety of other things. And basically what it does is it keeps the identity management external from the application. Here's the same diagram, same block diagram that exists for the SP part of this, and it's based on web services, of course. Here's some additional words. Shibboleth is based on SAML. That's Security Assertion Markup Language. That's a standard that's roughly at 2.0 right now. An attribute, it's a pair, a name value pair. For example, it might be UID and my ID, my particular ID, which is RRSUM. An assertion, user authentication and attribute information wrapped in a SAML type of transport, and a name identifier, any attribute elevated to identifier status. An entity ID, it's the name of a provider. An identity provider supplies assertions. So if I go to my home IDP, then what I get back is information about me and authentication of the fact that I'm who I am. A service provider receives those assertions and protects various resources. So a perfect example of this would be, I think you're all familiar with the TerraGrid, which is a large distributed supercomputing facility. It would act as a service provider, and then the various universities that where users access the TerraGrid, they're the appropriate IDPs in this case. A federation then is a trust structure to help large communities of IDPs or SPs interoperate without having individual handshakes across the network. And then metadata is obviously what it is in your world. There's an example of a federation that exists that is closely associated with Internet 2 called In Common. It has approximately 110 members now. The TerraGrid, for example, is a service provider. Various other service providers are involved, then a large number of universities that are associated with and are IDPs. I thought what I'd do is give you just a quick example of some of the problems that we're trying to focus on and face in the circuit world. Chris and Yarda talked a bit about the security model in that. Right now, the security model is very primitive. It's just based on passing the appropriate certificates. But if you think about it, let's take an example that occurs almost every day across our network right now. You have a user at the University of Nebraska that's associated with the high energy physics group. They need to create a circuit down to Fermilab to do a large data transfer. That crosses the Great Plains network, it crosses the Internet 2 DCN network, it crosses the ESnet circuit network, and then hits Fermilab. So you have five different domains across there. Who trusts whom in that whole ball of wax, basically? And so what we're trying to do is create a basic architecture that's associated with this. And it has similarities to many other kinds of situations, performance monitoring, for example. So the piece that's associated with authentication is up in the upper left-hand corner. It turns out that in Europe, they use a little bit different protocol. And so in order to make this sort of uniform, what we did was use a lookup service in order to indicate what protocol and what IDP to talk to. Once the user has that information, then it's assured that we know who that user is. And then the rest of the stuff down the line is a matter of understanding the various attributes that are associated with the particular user. So it hits the first resource. The user, in other words, has asked for a service. Okay? Now we know who the user is at this point. Do we know that the user is authorized to create this circuit, however? Maybe they are a member of the high energy physics group, and therefore they should be authorized to use this service. Well, who determines whether or not that user is in the LHC community? Should it be the IDP? Should it be the resource? Where should it come from? Well, it seems to me it should come from the virtual organization that consists of the LHC group. They should determine whether or not that's an LHC person. The resource can determine what policies it wants, of course, and whether or not it will grant access to that appropriate LHC user. So suppose the resource says yes, or it goes out to some kind of an attribute authority and says, is this guy an LHC person? And the attribute authority, which is an LHC-run thing, basically comes back and says, yes, this is an LHC thing. Okay? So now the first guy says, I'm okay with granting this guy the appropriate service. All right, and the resource then might pack that information into a token that sends it on to the next step in constructing the circuit. Okay? Does that resource trust what's in that particular assertion? Or does that resource go out and get the information again? Well, that's up to the resource. The resource sets its own policy, and so it can decide whether or not it will trust its neighbor or not. And then so forth down the line. So you have the basic authentication procedure that occurs, and then you have authorizations that occur on the various resources that exist, and they determine their own policy on what to accept. Eventually, assuming that that everything gets authorized down the line, then things go back and say, yes, we can create this circuit, and then it comes back up and they schedule when the appropriate resource can occur. So I'll stop there. it's sort of some of the problems that exist in this kind of area, and I think many of those kinds of issues also exist in this environment. Questions? Yeah.
So I've been working with the Navy on exactly this kind of service chaining example. And the problem they're running into is whose authentication gets used at that second service invocation. Is it the users? Is it the first resources? It seems that neither one gives them the functionality and security they want.
Yeah. What we're doing here is we're using the authentication from the user, and there is a trust relationship between these two resources. So between these two resources, there's a peering that goes on it's sort of a circuit world type peering. And so there's sort of a trust relationship between those two peerings.
So the problem in the military context then is that the first resource gets to impersonate the user, and that's a violation of least privilege.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay, so while Henning asked this quick question, whoever's doing our second talk,
Quick question. One of the issues that comes up is attribute assertions that you have. Currently, I gather the model is that the home institution asserts whatever attributes you have, faculty, or is member of a certain lecture class, or whatever. If I wanted to have, say, one of the Genie resources assert that this is a guy who has undergone privacy data training and thus is authorized to do certain things, would you need to get a separate identity with that, or would somebody else be able to add assertions to an existing identity?
Yeah, I understand what your question is. I don't think you need a separate identity. The IDP in this model sends back information about who the user is. So if the user at that stage is authenticated, it may send back attributes about the user. It might say, I'm an LHC guy. Now it's up to the first resource here, when it hits the first resource, as to whether or not they're going to trust that. If they say they don't want to trust that, if their policy is that they don't want to trust that, then they may go talk through an attribute service that's run by the LHC folks to say, well, tell me if this guy really is an LHC person. And then it comes back. But that's a policy that's set by the resource itself.
Okay,